Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I was waiting for that sound to come in. Okay, it's take a deep breath. It's 204. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Allison, Elizabeth, and Bettina. This is Movement Museum, where we talk about dance on your radio, on your computer, on your mobile device, all over the place. On the radio, it's CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on your cable dial, movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer, iTunes, if you just toss in, I think, dance, spelt the French way, you find us, although if you toss in dance with an S in Montreal, you definitely, definitely find us, and we're all over the place. How you doing?
All right. It's sunny out. Mm-hmm. I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm doing splendid.
Cool. No, we got, what is it, shafted, stiffed, stood up is the word that I'm looking for. Yeah, we got stood up today.
Sadly ignored.
Yes, we were supposed to have Manon Olney, who is the choreographer for We Are Robots, in studio to talk about, but due to complications, difficulties beyond our control, and other assorted things that just, at the time, were really, really frustrating, but now, just take a deep breath.
I'm gonna zen out. Yes. What are we listening to? Is it robots?
It came from a thing by Gordy MacDonald called Time/After Time, from the Big Bang to the Great Beyond, Global Blues.
Mm, nice.
Yeah, it was sort of confusing. I expected, given that it's a rather large jazz band with saxophones, trumpets, and stuff like that, that it was going to be much more traditional as opposed to whatever it was.
Ambient.
Yes.
This is definitely ambient.
And I realize I'm so totally and thoroughly unorganized and disorganized and have my head up my nether regions. If you guys can talk amongst yourself for a little bit, I can actually go and get the damn darn poem.
I just found something really interesting. There was a mirror left here, and it's the Best of Montreal edition out, and they have a list of the best dance companies / choreographers in the city, voted by Montreal. Mm-hmm. Mirror readers. And shall we start with number 10? Build up the tension. Yes. In the room. Number 10 is Dave St. Pierre. 9, Dana Michelle, or Mitchell. 8, Amy Blackmore, a friend of mine, which is fun. 7, Grand Ballet Canadien. I'm glad that they made it on the list. 6, Blueprint Crew. 5, Mary Chouinard. 4, 8 Count. Number 3, Dance Animal.
Really?
Very cool.
Isn't that fun? Who started off in the Fringe last year and have been just totally active since then with their comedy dance routine.
Yeah, and Robin Henderson made it onto the cover of, what is it, Nightlife Magazine? One of those fancy sort of free things. It's the one with the orange and the white cover out there. I think it's Nightlife.
Sound good. Mm-hmm. And number 2, Dead Doll Dancers. And number 1, my favorite, La 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 Human Steps.
Ah, yes.
So there you go. That's the Best of Montreal list of top 10 choreographers. How many have I seen? I've seen Grand Ballet, Amy Blackmore, Dance Animal, and Grand Ballet.
What would your vote have been?
I don't know. Probably pretty close, minus all the ones that I hadn't actually seen. I think Dance Animal's a lot of fun. I'm surprised it's on this list, though. You know, there's a lot of theater in the show. Mm. And
let me spit this out properly.
But it's really cool that they're on there.
Did they have any honorable mentions? Apparently not.
No. Oh. They just go into detail about the ghoulish Dead Doll Dancers breaking into the top 2 with their live, living dead burlesque and part comedy, part dance troupe, Dance Animal, a runaway success at last year's Fringe, beating out some of the country's best choreographers to round out third place. And if there was any doubt, Blueprint Crew proved that, yes, TV can still make you famous. They made their first appearance on the list after busting a move in lace leotards on America's Best Dance Crew. I think they came in second, which is pretty impressive because they're not an American dance company. Mm. So,
nice.
That's fun.
Cool.
You got a poem for us now?
I got a poem, yes. It's Tarantella by D.H. Lawrence. Sad as he sits on the white sea stone, and the suave sea chuckles and turns to the moon, and the moon's significant smiles at the cliffs and the boulders. He sits like a shade by the flood alone, while I dance a tarantella on the rocks and the croon. Of my mockery mocks at him over the wave's bright shoulders. What can I do but dance alone, dance to the sliding sea and the moon? For the moon on my breast and the air on my limbs and the foam on my feet. For surely this earnest man has none of the night in his soul and none of the tune of the waters within him, only the world's old wisdom to bleat. I wish a wild sea fellow would come down the glittering shingle, a soulless Neckar with winking seas in his eyes and falling waves in his arms and a lost soul's kiss on his lips. I long to be soulless, I tingle, to touch the sea in the last surprise of fury coldness, to be gone in a lost soul's bliss.
Very nice.
Yeah, I've never been a big fan of D.H. Lawrence.
But this one?
But this, and then, nice. Yeah. I'm not certain what it has to do with Tarantella, because I did, 15 seconds of research into it, and it doesn't strike me as being... Well, maybe it's the sort of thing where it's a tarantella because he's going to die, as opposed to dancing the tarantella so as to try and get rid of the poison.
All right.
But I don't know.
Have to read it again.
Mm-hmm.
Before we start out, I want to ask Allison about the duck wife. How is she?
How is she? She's doing well. She's, incubating her eggs right now and getting ready to fly west this summer.
Yeah, I've been on the Kickstarter.com site.
Wait, where are you guys at?
Yeah.
We're at, I believe, $2,300 last time I checked, which is so incredible. We're almost halfway there, and we're almost halfway there in terms of time, too. So I think we have about 15 more days left. And
very cool.
Oh my goodness, if you could give even, $5, anything you can give would definitely help us out a whole bunch. And we will not let you leave empty handed. We're going to give away albums and merchandise and I think little truffles, depending on how much you bid. So please go to Kickstarter.com and look up The Duck Wife and you can check out our project. Lots of fun images and videos and information up there.
Yeah, the video's nice.
Thank you.
Really gives a good idea of what it's going to be like.
Cool. We had fun putting that together.
And so, which would you guys like to start with? Because we saw a lot of dance.
We saw a lot of good stuff. Should we start with a big bang?
When we start with the big bang?
The big bang would be -1 for me.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So I take that's a 3 thumbs up from each of you.
Oh yes, definitely. It was just so spectacular. I remember when I saw the Jiri Kilian, and I came out there all aglow and said, "Well, this is going to be the ballet that all other ballets are going to be compared to." I think this one came pretty darn close, and I think maybe I don't know better. Better
again, different. Like it's a different aesthetic. But I would say, because I was consciously thinking of that comparison, unfortunately. But we put it out there, so it had to happen. But I'd have to say, Jiri Kilian still takes the cake. There were a certain moments in -1 where my attention kind of drifted, and I would bring it back. But it was mostly in the solo works. I think that this is Ohad Narin's choreography, and I think his strength is definitely the group pieces. When he has 30 dancers on stage, he knows what to do with them, and he knows how to captivate you. At the very beginning, when they have all 30 of them out there dancing in unison, and you're just like, it's one of those moments where you need to kind of let it wash over you, but at the same time, your eyes are so hungry to see what happens next, and he knows what you want to see next. Mm-hmm. I think we can give this away because it's just the most incredible thing, and it's in all the press photos, so you probably have an impression of it already. In suits, sitting in a giant semicircle on the stage, they do this wave from one side to the other, and they just kind of thrust their pelvises into the air and create an arch with their body, and they do it right one after the other.
Explode is the word that I would
explode.
The adjective I would use.
And it's you can't stop looking at it. It's so beautiful. And he gives it to us again and again because he knows how much we want to see that wave happen, that explosion happen.
Yeah, and it's in the repetition that is really the narrative. And the repetition with the flaw. Because everybody does the same move except one person.
Mm-hmm. Two.
No, first it was just one, the guy who fell off the chair. And then...
Yeah, that's interesting because he's the last one in the wave. And instead of passing it on, it's as if he like... was overwhelmed by the energy and he can't pass it on to the next person, so he just falls forward.
Yeah, it's like he's assassinated. I mean, he just collapses on the floor with a big sprawling thud and then gathers himself back up. And then halfway through, there's another guy who just, instead of arching his back, just stands on the chair. But, you know, not that self-conscious at all. Just gets up there, gets back down. And then you keep on looking for that floor, and that creates a second rhythm in the piece, and it becomes hypnotic.
And there's this really subtle acceleration in the piece. Like it's a longer piece, and it's really tiny, but you can feel the intensity building just because that little push every time it gets a little faster.
Yeah, I want to know what count they do, because it is the sort of thing where, although there is music playing behind it, it is obvious that everybody is just counting bum 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 bum.
It wasn't. I mean, the music was like very energetic rock music, but I couldn't see that they were exactly going on the beat.
Am I getting this right? That it's a traditional Passover song done by Tractor's Revenge.
Yes,
and the song is called "He Had Me." Yode?
Yes. No, you got that all right. The thing that surprised me the most is that upon going in, I said, I've seen this before. And then realized, yeah, it's at Théâtre de la Verdure, which is the free stuff, the free place in Parc La Fontaine. They did this back in 2004. And given how dramatic it is, it's tough to forget. But then in going through the notes, realized that actually minus one is a sort of mixed tape of dances. And so, yeah, the whole chair thing, which I do think... Well, I like the whole piece. I think the chair, that section is just the most spectacular part.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's from this piece called Anaphaza, or Anaphaza, or A-N-A-P-H-A-Z-A. And yeah, I'd love to see that
full-length
performance.
Production,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Mm. That was something I was thinking about in the show. I was like, it almost fits together really nicely. And you realize that it is a collage of a whole bunch of his past works, but it compliments each. It was really well put together in terms of which piece goes where.
And there, it's a sort of thing also I imagine, because I think, because that whole last little bit, it's like when they get people up on the stage, when you guys saw it, both of you saw it, right?
Yeah.
Was there a ringer in there? That old woman who, whatchamacallit, had got the spotlight put on her at the end?
Yes.
Okay. Because
you're ruining these surprises.
I was with a friend, and she was not entirely certain if it was a ringer or not. And I said, there's no way that just somebody who is of a certain age is going to have appropriate dance shoes and be able to handle the spotlight, and then just perchance one of the dancers goes out and gets a spotlight and puts it on her.
Oh, damn. Sorry. That's my fault.
You're popular.
I had to switch it off. I swear I'd switch it off. Just ignore it.
That's okay. But yeah, if as long as it was the same person who was there for your performances, then I can feel better about the fact that it was a ringer.
I don't know. I'm not convinced that that's the case. I would assume that it was an ordinary. She tried to run away. She had to have the dancer come and drag her back on stage.
She felt reasonably awkward.
No. I think this is, because this kind of puts a wrench in my theory, and I think my theory is pretty good. So I think she must have been a true audience member. Because the piece that came right before that was a series of solos by the dancers with voiceovers, kind of explaining why they started dancing or what they feel like when they're dancing, or just little fun little tidbits or what song was playing in their head at the time. It was really cute. And it kind of gave the audience this impression that everyone can dance, and that dancing is so enjoyable for so many different reasons. You know, just to feel your body, to be in front of people, to be narcissistic, to exercise. Like, it gave you all the reason in the world to want to get up and dance, and gave you the confidence. There was one woman who told the story of how she was in a car accident and was in a wheelchair for 2 years.
And her sister died.
Yeah.
And I bet you also thought that the voice that was being played was of the voice of the dancer doing the solo.
Can I just... let me live in my fantasy world,
please?
Please.
Hello.
It's really nice over here, and
do we have to throw you out? Jeez, you're such a Grinch.
So anyway, you're like, well, if, you know, if I can live in a wheelchair for 2 years and then get up and dance, that's amazing. So everyone's infused with this enthusiasm, with this inspiration, and then they come out and drag people out of their seats. So I don't think it's unrealistic to assume that those were all, you know, just audience members.
Oh, not all, just the one. The one, and because she's sitting in the audience, yeah, she is an audience member, but she didn't have to buy her ticket, and I think she saw
but then
all
why,
the performances.
Because they always, they picked people who didn't look like dancers, and they picked people who were wearing bright colors. Did you notice that?
Didn't notice the bright colors.
That was a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she wasn't wearing a bright color. She was wearing white. She took her sweater off. That's, I think that if she were a ringer, they would have gotten, made her wear something bright and keep the bright mm-hmm. color on.
Given that we're all talking about the same person, we know exactly who we're talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah. Unless she went twice. Maybe she got a free ticket because she had to, you know, work on the previous evening. I said, hey.
And oh, one more thing I wanted to say about the bringing the audience members up on stage. It's... Even just writing it down, I was like, this sounds really kitschy, but it wasn't. It was fantastic, and you couldn't stop smiling about it. And they kind of did like a little personal dance. Again, this is when they're in a bulk, you know, 30 dancers on stage. They do these little private dances for their audience member to warm them up, and then kind of lead them in a little couples dance, and then lead them around the stage. And it was beautiful to show kind of communication without necessarily using words. Mm-hmm. And you got to watch it happen. You got to see non-dancers communicate with dancers.
I just also like that nobody was made to feel awkward.
No, it was
they went showing off, you know, the lack of talent of some of these people. But I must say that I'm impressed with Montrealers. They have some moves.
Yeah.
Even those who don't have any moves, they really, really tried.
As you saw people getting more comfortable, you know, you started seeing the spins and the
Did
lifts.
Did you like the
stuff?
Guy? There was one couple that was guy and guy. And the audience member, he just didn't know how to move. And the male dancer just picked him up
yeah,
and started swirling
yeah.
him around. That was so funny.
It was great.
The audience loved it because I think we all sympathized with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was sitting upstairs and I was going, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm not parterre.
Yeah, even when they come out and you're like, don't make eye contact.
Look down.
Yeah.
No, but there it's when I saw them at Théâtre de la Verdure.
Mm-hmm.
About 99% positive. After that, that's when the show ended.
Not here.
I know, exactly. Okay. That there was a difference. And so...
It should have been the ending, though, I think.
Yeah, and it is... I wish I had taken notes back, what was it, 6 years ago, because there it's... Is minus one the sort of thing where each section has to be done in order following this one, or is it the sort of thing, these are the sections and how do you want to combine them together? Because I wouldn't be far-fetched for that, because that, yeah, that was a downer way to end it and stuff like
that.
Well,
it was all
yes
right,
and no. The female solos, one after the other, they're all like 2 minutes long. They're all very nice, you know, beautiful, kind of strong lines and very kind of, you know, sexy costumes and just very like goddess-like solos, one after the other. But it was just kind of dragged, and that was probably my least favorite part of the performance. But then it got followed up by the Que Sera, you know,
yeah,
group piece, which was just an awesome ending, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Though my favorite was the five male dancers and those sarong pants doing the tribal piece with the xylophone music.
And they had clay they rubbed on their faces.
I think that really embodied this kind of the concept of the choreographer, which tends to be, I establish a sequence of movements,
mm-hmm.
and that movement, like a virus, gets mm-hmm. transferred from one dancer to the next, like one dancer's right. teaching it to the next, and then the idea with the flaws and the sequencing and the narrative really came to the forefront in that piece.
Yeah, really complex sequencing and floor patterns. You'd mm-hmm. you'd almost create kind of a whirlwind circle, and there'd be like almost a space in the room where this jump would happen, and whoever happened to kind of pass that space, this jump would happen in, and then you'd see it repeated elsewhere, and then the pattern would change and it would change again, and you could almost see it, and then it would It was like smoke moving through.
Unpredictable, but sort of predictable.
But understandable.
Like a ritual, which is what I like. It had a very tribal feel to it. So this idea of repetitive movement and ritual, and some people are part of the group and others are not, was really clear that it communicated well.
And I think you're right that was kind of a base. Like you could see that in the other group pieces, especially that last one with the complexity and... the returning two movements.
Yeah, and I really like also the way he dances, or not he dances, but he makes his dancers move.
Mm-hmm.
It feels more like dancing than the Killian pieces. The movements are grander and more energetic, and there's more the signature move that he makes where his people got sort of arching back, this back stretch. It's rhythmic, and I just like the movements a lot better.
He has a really, and I had a foresight, or I was told that he has a really good way of being subtly humorous.
Yes, I like that, yes.
While still creating beautiful work, and that was definitely true in the piece. You could see these like shuffling, this is my favorite, is a male-female duet. She was shuffling along on her knees, going forward with her arms to her side. And he backed up kind of on all fours and knocked her over with his bum and kind of like kept going past her. And it was just cute little moments like this that would come, you know, you have these beautiful kind of kicks and turns and interactions, and then something silly like that would happen, but without kind of breaking the mood. I don't know. It was really well done.
Very inventive way of making the dancers move. I also like this when he went into a crouch and sort of like a little duck went on his toes. That was so funny. And the audience responded. Everybody started chuckling a little bit and then became serious as the piece returned to its seriousness.
Yeah, it wasn't like this laugh out loud guffaw kind of humor. It was just like, intrigue, interesting.
Yeah.
He also, space, he has this beautiful concept of space, and he makes it feel as though the stage is just a window into this dance that's happening everywhere in the world. For example, that last group piece would often kind of move towards the back corner, and half the dancers would be forced off stage because there was just no room for them.
Right.
And then as soon as there was room made, they would all just come clamoring back on, and it was just this excerpt. And also with the line, they had this beautifully lit line of dancers at the front of the stage early on in the work, and doing this very kind of sharp movements interspliced with more kind of sporadic loose movements, and perfect unison, except for the moments, of course, when they weren't supposed to be in unison.
Exactly.
And when they would just shuffle over to one side, if they made enough space, you know, another dancer would pop out, and then when they didn't need her anymore, she would just pop back out off stage. It was really well done. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that detail.
I like that when they use lighting effectively in this kind of production, especially that piece that you're talking about. It was really dark at first, and you could barely make out the dancers, and it felt like they were floating in space.
Mm.
And so the stage looks so much bigger than it actually is. And I've seen that done at Tonjon to great effect as well. It's obviously something dancers and the lighting experts kind of work in tandem. But it's very effective. I really enjoy the atmosphere of that piece.
So any last words, or should we move on?
Three thumbs up.
And I take it we all want to go see Nutcracker this year, right? My reason for saying that is because it seems every time you've seen Le Grand Ballet Canadien, you've raved about.
This is true. La Sylphide wasn't Grand Ballet, was it?
Nope.
No. I don't know. I may do the Nutcracker.
Channel that inner six-year-old.
Yeah. I love the music. That's an easy sell.
Oh, well, speaking of Le Grand Ballet Canadien, I just wanted to give a shout out here to, shout out, he's an incredible human being, Gradmir Pankov, who is the artistic director of Le Grand Ballet Canadien. I believe he's been working there for about 10 years now, and we have him to thank for bringing us Minus One and Jerry Killian and all the rest.
And also Les Sylphides.
And Les Sylphides. We'll just leave that out. But yeah, he's got a lot of European connections, and so they say that that's kind of, he's bringing them over, and we're enjoying Montreal's love of neoclassical dance. So I'm really happy that he's in charge there, and he's bringing us such beautiful pieces.
Now, I've got a recording of him talking with Alina Apostalska, is I think how I butcher her name, for part of the Visage de la Danse series, where we recorded everything, and sometime towards the summer when it does calm down slightly with regard to dance, I will be airing that, and we can hear all about his life. But in the meantime, it's 2:28. This is Movement Museum. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Allison, Elizabeth, and Bettina. We're talking about dance on your computer, on your radio, on your mobile device. And we need to go take a break here. We'll be back on the other side. And we're back. It's 2:29 and 32 seconds. CKUT is where your radio dial is tuned to, 90.3 FM, 91.7 on your cable dial, movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer, mobile device. There's Twitter, there's Facebook, there's iTunes. Yeah, and given that I'm just about ready to ditch Facebook, we're going to have to find someplace else as well.
Oh, you're ditching Facebook?
Yeah, I think it's actually jumped the shark. It's gotten way too something for its own good. But we can discuss that later off the air because that has nothing to do with dance in Montreal whatsoever. And so you want to talk about We Are Robots?
Sure.
Figure out what the questions we would have asked our guest had she shown up.
Well, I can just tell you what I did see when I went last Saturday?
Yeah, the 7th.
Party started at around 10. Robots started dancing at the stroke of midnight. Very impressive. If this had been art students, it probably would have been around 2 a.m. But seeing that this is engineering students, I'm glad I got there on time because it was midnight and those things started moving around.
They set up and you could see them beforehand?
Yes. So they were set up in a room that was closed off with glass doors, like a corridor. And then you had these big like French doors. And then it was cordoned off, so you couldn't get right to the windows. We couldn't so see the robots really close up, but close enough. And they were already a little bit lit with a couple of red lights. But then the light show really started at midnight, and they started moving to the sounds of the DJ. And then it stopped. Everybody was already very excited because it looked cool. These white industrial robots. It's basically just one big robotic arm, four robotic arms. And then there was an announcement, sorry, we have a little technical problem. It'll be 5 minutes. And I go, oh, here we go again, half an hour. But again, engineering students are good with timing and they're very precise. So about 5 minutes later, it started with a different soundtrack. And then the movements of the robots became more lyrical, if you can say that. The music was composed by Jan Pinkowski. And it was also in the kind of techno, rave, electronica style. And I really liked it. It was very good. I had kind of hoped that I could buy it on iTunes. I held my iPhone there and pressed my Shazam app, but no, I could not get it. So I hope Jan puts that online because it's beautiful music. And what I liked about the robots dancing was that robots have a lot of joints. So they have advantages over human beings that you can make them do more stuff. So they were twirling around and, you know, moving left to right and striking diagonal poses, mostly. The actual piece, I think, to Jan's music was slower in pace, and there were different kinds of movements. For the rest of the evening, the robots were kind of dancing along with the regular techno music, and then they returned to being robots and doing the same repetitive movements over and over. But for those 10 minutes, it seemed they were briefly inhabited by a soul and they had a mind of their own and they were no longer going to put together cars and they were just going to dance now. And that was just, it's a simple idea, but it was beautiful and everybody got it and people were whipping out their cameras. And
were these robots designed to dance?
No.
They
were reprogrammed. So the programmer is called Yannick Noiseux, and Manon and Yannick obviously worked together. She figured out the choreography. Then they were programmed by one of the engineering students to actually do that. And they set it to music, and then they danced for 15 minutes.
So was the original job of these robots to make cars? Or
I don't know. You see, there wasn't a press release or anything, so I had to kind of go by my gut. But from looking at them, they looked like they were make, you know, maybe put in a dashboard in a car or, you know, wire something. They have these this kind of pincer hand, and they can move in lots of different ways. So they obviously transport things maybe from one conveyor belt to the next. I mean, they look like very mundane things. It's not like one of those complicated, sophisticated R2-D2 types. It's really just like way down in the food chain.
So they weren't dressed up at all?
No. I was looking for bows or anything. I thought at one point one was wearing a little hat, but I think it was just a piece of wiring that you know, I got carried away with my imagination.
Were they all moving in unison, or were there certain times where one of the machines or each of the machines would get a solo?
Yeah, I was looking for that kind of choreography, having seen Minus One, and thought, here we have sequencing again, and will somebody do the odd thing out? It was hard to see because they were in this recess, so you couldn't actually see all four robots at the same time. But I was sort of shuffling through the crowd back and forth and trying to get a glimpse. It looked like for most of the time they were in unison. I think there was maybe a couple of minutes where the robot at the far end was doing his own thing. And that would have been nice if they would, you know, also rebel a little bit.
Prima ballerina.
Maybe that was the one with a hat.
I need my solo.
Yeah, and there were strobe lights to go with it. And it was fun, you know.
So it was the sort of thing where, would you consider the choreography just the movement of the robotic arms? Or do you think that it was also with the lights and how it was presented, or do you think that they sort of split up the various jobs so that each person who was responsible was doing their own thing?
That's hard to tell. I think considering how much lighting design and choreography goes hand in hand with Mark G. Gillis, obviously, and what we just said about Minus One, I would think that Manon may have had a large part to play in the lighting, because there were different colored lights, they went with the music, they would highlight certain movements. So my guess is yes, but who knows? It doesn't mention a lighting designer on the poster. So one of those three had a finger on the colored light trigger.
Okay. And there, it's the all-important question. You know if it's up on YouTube yet?
Yeah. like I said, I whip out my iPhone for any kind of occasion. So there's some sort of blurry, not very well-resolved little thing that I cut together on my blog. It's called, if you go on YouTube and you go for We Are Robots at ETS Montreal, you'll be able to see it. I did the best I could, but it'll give you a good idea. Oh, and I also like to mention they are the VJ had some visuals. There were these three giant screens behind the DJ. So it was a DJ and a VJ, and the VJ was cutting together these visuals from Pink Rubber Lady and Joe Cool. They were very amazing. I like them a lot. There are some clips of that as well in my YouTube thing. So yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Well done, Manon. Sorry you couldn't be here.
Yeah, next time I'm going to have to learn to stay up late so that I can go see it.
Yeah, it was totally worth staying up to past midnight.
I don't do that all that often these days.
It's good to start a party past midnight. I was completely buzzed. Very hard to fall asleep after.
I can remember, what was it? Yeah, just years ago, where it was the sort of thing when the Jazz Festival still had their blues things happening at midnight at the Spectrum. And where I told a friend, yeah, the best music shows start at the latest possible time. And now I realize, yes, I just can no longer do that. Within the sort of Utmost being one of my favorite albums, this has absolutely a total aside, but Allman Brothers Live at the Fillmore East, which is a back in the day a double LP album of the Allman Brothers, and they recorded it live. It's an amazing album. Was apparently an amazing concert. They didn't get on stage until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my god. Wow, that is stamina.
Well, I think they probably didn't wake up until midnight.
I think the last time I stayed up that late to see some dance was Nuit Blanche.
Ah, yes.
But then you just have to.
Special occasion.
Once every 18 months or so, I do pull an all-nighter, but it has nothing to do with performance or anything like that. I think it's just more me sort of gritting my teeth and saying, okay, I'm not going to let those buggers get me yet. So, we go for the downer now?
The downer?
The downer,
is that a preview of how you thought of Toronto Dance Theater?
Yes.
Oh, God.
What you thought of it?
Yeah, it is the sort of thing where it was after seeing Minus One where I found a lot of similarities or a lot of parallels And Dissolver, or however, Dissolver.
Yeah, there's lots of punctuation in there, isn't there?
No, there are a lot of useless nonsense in there, along with the dance as well. It's the sort of thing where I found there were a lot of parallels to Minus One, just in the way that, well, the troupe is not as large as the Grand Ballet Canadien. It was the guys in the suits at the Grand Ballet Canadien and the guys in the suits in the Toronto Dance Theatre, and the sort of abstract type of dancing, but it was the sort of thing that there just was no rhyme, reason, or to my mind, purpose to anything that the Toronto Dance Theatre was doing. So there's one thing where they sort of like all would hold hands and various things. They'd sort of make this sort of snake, what's the traditional various dances that you do where you sort of like...
The conga?
The conga line, mm-hmm. Or I think you have it in just about every single culture. And they sort of use that as the basis for going off, and I ended up in my notes just referring it to as the pretzel, because they twist around mm-hmm. and on top of each other and so on and so forth. And that was just about like the most interesting thing, and it really wasn't all that interesting. There was a whole bunch of time when it's sort of like, because the guys are in suits and the women are in sort of what look to be party dresses, it's the sort of thing where, okay, you're sort of thinking maybe there's some sort of statement on the state of male female relationships these days, communications, but then you realize no, not at all. No, it's a nice idea, nice sort of switch. Yeah, I'm disappointed that if I don't know, do you guys read Rover Arts?
Yeah.
Okay, it's this website by Marian Ackerman that talks about arts all the time, and she's got this guy, girl, I have no idea, Tao Fei, who just made me insanely jealous, because there it's obviously Tao Fei knows more in their little finger about dance than I will ever know in my entire life. But he just, or she just, or they just came and dissed it with explanations and using large words like postmodern and bad postmodern, and then riffing off with a whole whack of knowledge.
This is a review of it
an online review that I agree with entirely, and just uses lots of big words in a very good way to explain just about everything that is horrible, bad, and wrong with it. But
right,
into every life a little rain must fall.
But was there some sort of concept or narrative? What was it about beside the conga line?
I'm certain there was. I couldn't figure it out.
Wow.
It's, as I said,
it did not communicate.
No, I tried to think, and was given that there was a lot of male-female stuff. I was thinking maybe it's about communication, because it does give this sort of sense of some sort of party type of atmosphere, and there are chairs, and so will you dance? Do you want to dance? Or the unstated sort of stuff that goes along with it, but it really did not come through at all, which is unfortunate. But then I can just sort of revert back to, or just get into my normal bias. Everything that comes from Toronto is horrible.
Ooh, burn. I think that's a sweeping statement.
Yes.
Zeke's opinions do not necessarily reflect my own. Toronto, we're coming for you this summer.
It is one of the things that is very clear. Yes, these are my opinions, and there are lots and lots of times when I disagree very violently and strongly with lots of people. So in actual fact, I know there are 1, 2, 3, 4 people I can think of off the top of my head, or if I say it's horrible, mm-hmm. they are running straight to the ticket window.
Okay.
What about the performance quality? Was that
it's the same sort of thing where there were the parallel, like, was because I saw them probably about 4 days apart, and the dancers of Le Grand Ballet Canadien, it's like everybody hits their mark mm-hmm. right at the same time, and then you can see this is the sort of thing where there are 7 or 8 of them on stage at the Toronto Dance Theatre, and they sort of get it all together, but not really quite, and it's sort of like a thump, 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 as opposed to a thump.
Was there sweet music involved?
The closest thing I could say was the set design, where on stage left, there were these big drapes that the person I was with thought they might be silk because they were nicely crinkled. I sort of thought that they might have been craft paper because they were nicely crinkled. We were obviously not close enough to be able to touch them or feel them. And they got some sort of swash of spotlights that sort of made them pastel. And so it's sort of like a tan and a beige and a gray and very muted, nice colors. And then there was one effect at the end where all the lights on stage went off, but they had the stage lights on the, not the stage lights, the offstage lights, so that the dancers could go to their showers, whatever is backstage. And it made a very, very dramatic thing just before the Toronto Dance Theatre came out and took their bows. But yeah, that was about the only thing that I really liked about it. And so whether it's craft paper or silk, it looks really, really cool when it's large floor-to-ceiling stuff.
Choreographer Zeke, what would you do, like, if you could just change one thing to improve dramatically the piece? What would it be?
Take the dancers off the stage. I'm not one for these finely nuanced ideas. And then also, next week we will be having the people who brought them into town in studio. Because Dance Dance, that was the final Dance Dance show of the season. And so, yeah, I could be really, really nasty and say good riddance, but it's not actually the case. It's actually, the whole Dance Dance season was very, very nice, and I quite enjoyed most of it.
Oh, me too. Mm-hmm.
But, what is it? Madame Clotilde and, I gotta go look it up. But yeah, they're coming in next week, so it's to talk about the 2010-2011 season. Plus their Bring a Kid to Dance, and then we can all, if you want to hear me with my finely nuanced statements, we can then get on a conversation about funding of dance through various levels of government. Because I'm certain everybody's going to be just wanting to jump on that bandwagon and say that everybody's doing such a phenomenal and spectacular job of making sure that all of this survives for eons and eons.
At least another year.
Yeah. So any other questions about TDT?
No, thanks.
Okay.
I'm good.
So how about we take a break here? Because we have one more ad to play. This is Movement Museum. My name is Zeke. I'm the one with the finely nuanced ideas and concepts. I'm sitting here with Allison, Elizabeth, and Bettina. And we're talking about dance on your radio, on your computer, and all other type of objects. I thought that was a nice intro.
Yeah, very jazzy.
There was one point in my life where I wanted to walk around with a horn section, make an entrance. Okay. I can tell from your expression, you're not amused.
No, it's hilarious. Actually, you can get a t-shirt at Think Geek that comes with a loudspeaker and a personalized soundtrack. You should get that.
No, I just wanted, two horns, two saxophones, a tuba, trombone, and a flute just walking around behind me.
Well, that's modest.
Let's go on. Let's talk about dance.
This is Movement Museum. My name is Zeke. And yeah, the horse I'm flogging today is my finely nuanced concepts and ideas about things. We're talking about dance. I'm here with Allison, Elizabeth, and Bettina. And yeah, it's CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, 91.7 on your cable dial, and movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer. So we had one other performance last week or 2 weeks ago that we saw.
What is your finely nuanced opinion about the Maggie Gillis piece, Filiatur?
Actually, it is a finely nuanced thing. The piece was really, really nice. I recognize the fact that it is a piece that she is just starting to do, and so obviously over time it will shift. One of the things that caught my eye was how in some of the press pictures she's wearing what looks to be a fishnet type of dress for the first one. And for the first little, because it is set up into probably about five or six different sections. And then in the piece performance that I saw, she wasn't wearing that fishnet, because at the time when I saw it, I still had my humongous and massive and ever eternal crush on her. But I've discovered recently it is not an ever eternal crush. And if she had been wearing a fishnet stocking, then I would I think my eyes would have popped out or something like that. But, and then also in other press pictures, there are, she's moving around stuff, which doesn't happen either. And so it is, to me, a work very much in progress. It is the concept that she's got. Yeah, using Toronto Dance Theatre as a starting point. Obviously using thread filature or filature, because filature is a different word in French.
That's true, yes.
That concept definitely came through, and it was I think it was we were having the conversation where the one question I wanted to ask last week is that whole idea of there are obviously ties that bind, and is it better to have lots and lots of little ties that bind, i.e. together, united together, or whatever that is, you get the whole branches together so that you can't crack them over, or is it better to have just one really, really big tie? And I'm not quite certain. I figure today's Thursday, so I'm going to think this way, and tomorrow or Saturday I'll go change my mind and think the other way. The other thing that I was quite enamored about is how, yeah, back at the beginning of Mark Gillis's career, she was known for sort of, what is it? What would be the opposite of floor work? Air work?
Body work?
Standing work?
No. She was off the stage. She would jump around. She'd swoop around like a dolphin and stuff. Yeah, there's a bunch of things where she'd like do standing backflips.
Wow, impressive.
And yes, it was very, very impressive. And it struck me that, yeah, she started off working above the stage, and this one especially, that whole first bit with these sort of rubber bands hanging on out on the stage, is she was very much grounded on the stage. And so as a sort of bookend to her career, the sort of thing of just sort of going from above to being sort of solidly stuck on the stage, and she did it phenomenally well. So yeah, how's that?
That's pretty good. Yeah, I like that it raises philosophical questions in you about strings that bind us. I was thinking along the same lines. I remember Waiting for Godot. There's also that scene where, you know, you have there's this long, long rope, and you're not sure if the person who has his head in the noose is not maybe the person leading. And it was very similar there. You know, is are rays of sunshine coming out of Margie Gillis, or is she being bound down? Yes. And I like that ambivalence of her symbolism.
Yeah, there's also the sort of thing where I can remember back when I was a youngster, she had done this piece by Martha Clark called Nocturnes, which is all about an elderly dancer. And she definitely cops some bits and pieces from that, or maybe they're just generic dance moves that I haven't seen enough dance, but there were connections to that. And yeah, I'd like to, yeah, she said last week that it might be her last performance, because I imagine, yes, or I don't imagine, I know that doing solo shows for, what is it, like 300,000 gazillion hours that she's on stage or something like that, are not the easiest thing in the world to do as you get older.
Yeah, and she had knee surgery. I guess that takes it out of you as well.
And so I'm hoping that these performances aren't the last ones, whether or not this is the last piece she choreographs for herself. It would make for a nicer end of career piece. Go out with a bang, or go out with, what's the sound you make when you're embroidering?
A whimper. A bang or a whimper?
No. When you're embroidering.
Oh, when you're embroidering?
Yeah, we got to make this sort of like connections to thread.
Oh, I don't think embroidering makes any sounds unless you sting yourself with a needle.
And you go, ow.
And then there's swear words. We won't repeat those on air.
But yeah, I'm hoping that she does do another performance of it, because it'd be neat to see it again after certain things are sort of stuck, and these are the things that are good. Because that whole, like, I could see at the beginning where she was sort of playing cat's cradle with her feet with the rubber bands on the floor. Yeah, you're sort of looking questioning because we're not doing a real good job of explaining the description of what it was.
Well, luckily I saw the demo video, so I got a bit. I'm just wondering, for anyone listening out there,
yeah,
can you give paint me a picture?
You want to go, or you want me to go?
You're eager. Go.
Okay. Those finally nuanced ideas. But yeah, it starts out with her on stage. There's a set of rubber bands, bungee cords, that are really big ones that are sort of stretched along the floor. She plays with them with her feet, her arms, and so on. She actually comes out first sort of tied to something off stage. Then there are these two sort of moving these boxes on wheels that I first thought when we were just sort of sitting down looking at stuff that actually had bamboo in them, but in actual fact they are not bamboo, but they are more sort of thread, bungee cord, rubber band type, elastic type of stuff that is basically all the way through. They're sort of filled up like you would imagine sort of undergrowth in a forest. And after she does her cat's cradle work with the rubber bands on the floor, those get removed. She's working with this young 20-year-old guy or something like that, and then this 80-year-old woman as well, which while interesting, it's the sort of thing I've sort of viewed them as more sort of like stage hands as opposed to actual dancers, because an awful lot of the time they just are working within the transitions between various set pieces and help move around things. So yeah, these boxes, you suddenly realize they don't have bamboo in them. They have a whole bunch of sort of rubber bands, which then at various points people run through. Margie Gillis runs through where her previously, her hair was sort of like one of the easy props that would be used within her dance, because she'd sort of swing her head around and stuff like that, and the hair would follow, and it would look very, very graceful and liquid and fluid. These threads, rubber band, bungee cords, or what have you, that are in the boxes serve a certain similar purpose. They also end up highlighting and emphasizing, just because they are hanging out willy-nilly and you can get sort of tangled up in them and sort of lost in them and stuff like that, that whole nature of threads. And while one thread that follows through and sort of makes a life a unique life, there are other times when multiple threads and you get into knots and so on and so forth. And so, yeah, there are just a bunch of set pieces. Then, oh, this is working without notes. I should have written my notes. But then there's this piece at the end where, yeah, she switches costumes, what, three times, four times or something like that?
Yeah,
she ends
four times.
In this red, red dress with long arms
and ribbons,
which then also
like a shawl.
Made sort of that certain of the costumes made reference to straight jackets,
mm-hmm.
which is another way
white dress,
yes. And so yes, I'm obviously running out of steam in my description. At the beginning was definitely something that impressed me enough that I can close my eyes, visualize it without referencing notes, and explain what happened. So if you can fill in Allison Elizabeth with the rest of it, so that
I
look so bad.
I like to go back to these cubes of strings. It looked like boxes of rain. I mean, they are ribbons just hanging very tidily, evenly spaced, until Margie started to mess with them. And then I like this sort of order disorder symbolic that happened right there. And she played with geometry a lot, like the bungee cords. She would create diagonals in space, and you know those rain cubes were, you know, straight verticals. So there was a lot of aesthetic. And I remember Zeke and I talked after the show, and you thought at first there wasn't even a narrative, that it was a purely aesthetic piece, and then that the narrative became more obvious sort of halfway through, and then it was obviously recognizable sections, and a lot of the narrative then came more out of Margie. She would then, you know, act out seduction with the younger dancers, or then there was this older woman, and when she was lying on the floor and Margie was you know, sort of crying over her, then it was, you know, grief, and it became very obvious what the piece was about. But it was dark in the end. I felt it was a lot about, you know, woman aging, and there wasn't a lot of joyful jumping. It was very materialized, reflective.
Yes, now there it's definitely a end of career piece. Make it clear as mud?
Yeah,
no, that sounds beautiful.
Okay.
I hope it's not the end, though. I hear what you're saying. But having her in last week, it's like, oh yeah, she's going to be around.
She will be around, and I'm certain she's going to continue dancing. I'm just not certain she will continue dancing for like these insane amounts of solo shows that require ridiculously insane amounts of just energy and concept and stuff like that. And much more sort of like, yeah, you do that. Yeah, okay, I'll come in and I'll take the spotlight, take my bow, thank you very much, and then you do that.
I wonder if we'll see a whole new side of her in her choreographing for other people.
And so what do we have for next week?
We are going to...
I'm talking more in terms of, are you guys going to see anything?
Oh, yeah. We're going to Soirée Moirie at Studio 303. It looks like fun. It is an evening of performances, projection, song, dance, play, and other objects, relational surrealism. And also, if you come and you wear a smoking jacket, apparently that's appreciated. I'm going to have to rummage through my wardrobe.
What exactly is a smoking jacket?
A smoking jacket?
Normal jacket.
Velvet long tails, maybe?
No. I had a smoking jacket that was, straight back.
Oh, straight back?
Yeah, it was double vented, but it's my Yeah, they're elaborate. They are way more foppish. And sorry to steamroll over you, but I had
no,
some. And
if you
I
know
used
what,
to smoke
it,
as
what
well.
It is. Yeah, but it says here, no smoking.
Yeah, they,
and garçons are welcome.
Imagine, if you will, a tuxedo designed as to look like pajamas.
Okay.
It's the sort of thing where a smoking jacket is supposed to be comfortable, but at the same time, since it's from a certain era, a gentleman would never, ever, ever be caught not wearing a jacket.
So it sounds like it's going to be like a themed atmosphere evening.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. So that's at Studio 303 on the 14th and 15th of May.
Yeah.
Though the 9 o'clock show on Friday has been cancelled. There's only the 7 o'clock, and then there's a 7 at 9 o'clock show on the 15th. And also, I'm going to a hooping workshop at the Wants It Needs studio this Sunday at 10 Pine West, Studio 412, 1 to 3 p.m. If you want to learn how to hoop, you should show up, $25.
And then there's also the Off TA, which is starting next week, May 17th. And I have conveniently printed out stuff, because, yeah, I'm going to have to, we're going to have to get the woman who organizes it in here just so that I can go and you guys can't see me sort of shaking my finger and stuff like that, because it is, I want a little bit of organization, please. It's where the, what is it, 13th of May today?
Yes.
4 days away, and I have no clue who's dancing, where they're dancing, what they're dancing, or anything like that. The only thing I know is that the OFTA is working with the FTA, and that the parties that are happening at the Agora Hydro Quebec or wherever it is at UQAM downtown, those are going to be some seriously cool parties. But yeah, after the show, I'm going to go squirrel myself away with the program for the OFTA and the FTA. And
so we have no hints?
I have no clue yet.
Oh, no.
Next week.
Secretive bunch.
Yes, exactly. And oh, and then also, I will probably arm wrestle you guys. I just found out that the Cossacks of Russia are coming to, where is it? Place des Arts. And they are the guys who sort of jump 17 feet in the air and then touch their toes.
Oh.
Sounds impressive.
I know exactly what you mean.
So yes, I'm going to go find out about that. But yes, prime time's here. Positive Vibes is on the air. We have run overtime, but as usual, Prime Time is a very gentle and forgiving soul. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Bettina and Allison Elizabeth, who make me look, sound, and act way better than I have any right to be. Thank you again. This has been Movement Museum. We'll speak to you all next week. Soy tu amada, tu neta. Quieres tú bailar, quieres tú bailar bajo la luna y no dejes de abrazarme nunca. Nena, quieres tú bailar. Yes, 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 tú bailar. Yes, 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 tú bailar. Yes, 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 quieres tú bailar.